This is NBC Radio News with a hotline report.
NBC News Hotline Report. Here with a report of the news conference by Secretary of State Dean Rusk is NBC News correspondent Peter Hackus.
Secretary of State Rusk is holding a news conference at the State Department Auditorium. The conference is already in progress. It began a few minutes ago with a brief review of the events of last year. Then Secretary Rusk took a look at the major items on the 1968 agenda. It went like this.
We're going to
obviously our great preoccupation
days to
talk
with Prince
in Southeast Asia,
members of his government about the problem
of maintaining
independence and territorial
possession, that peace must be established
on a durable basis there.
Prince Sihanouk rightly
on
is
basis
deeply
in which
concerned
all nations,
about
including the small nations
not
of
being
Southeast
engaged
Asia,
in the situation of violence
from
harassment, borders,
violence thrown against them from outside their borders. I know that you're interested in the recent statement by the North Vietnamese foreign minister. And in a such statement of that sort, there are two questions. First, what did he say? And secondly, what did he mean? The first is fairly clear in terms of the text of what he said. I've seen a good deal of speculation about what he meant, and some clarification by Hanoi correcting some of that speculation. But to determine what he meant is a more complicated business and has to be pursued by means other than public declarations on both sides. And that clarification will be sought. As far as the United States is concerned, I would call your attention once again to what the President said in San Antonio. He said that the United States is willing to stop all aerial and naval bombardment of North Vietnam when this will lead promptly to productive discussions. We, of course, assume, he continued, that while discussions proceed, North Vietnam would not take advantage of the bombing cessation or limitation. And that remains the position of the United States. And what we need to do is to find out whether there is any increasing compatibility between the statements made by the two sides. We will keep in very close touch with the government of South Vietnam and with the other allies who have forces engaged in the conflict. And we will pursue as skillfully as we can the question of finding out whether there's been any change in the situation. I cannot tell you today whether there has been a change or not. Some of these statements are referred back to the statement made by Hanoi in January. We know that they have issued orders for an intensified offensive during the winter season. We can't help but take note of the fact that there was an intolerable violation of the recent New Year's ceasefire with a two-battalion attack on a base camp of American forces while that ceasefire was supposed to be effective, leading to the loss of life of American soldiers and a large loss of life on the part of the enemy, that a similar large-scale attack was delivered on Vietnamese forces during the same period. These all have some bearing on the situation. However, the determined policy of the United States is to find a means to move toward peace in Southeast Asia if possible. And that will be explored fully. If there's a desire for peace, the United States, as President Johnson has said more than once, will go more than halfway to find peace. But this is more complicated than it sounds at first blush, and it would be necessary to learn in detail what the other side has in mind.
Secretary Rusk then mentioned his hopes for peace in the Middle East, his hopes for a reduction in the U.S. gold outflow deficit, hopes for a treaty banning the spread of nuclear weapons. Attention then quickly returned to matters involving Southeast Asia. We now rejoin Secretary Rusk's news conference in progress at the State Department.
That is not sufficient.
No, I don't mean anything myself yet. I'm trying to find out what they mean. I'm just pointing out that here that is a point as an example of a point that needs clarification.
How does a Gaston and Alphonse act?
Well, that's more a problem for public speculation and for the reporters than it is for us who are in the business. We have ways and means of clarifying these things.
Secretary, has the United States yet begun its explorations to clarify these questions, or does that await further consultation with allied nations?
Well, I'm a little hesitant to comment on that. I think that you can assume that if you were in my position, you would try to clarify these matters without delay. But I've noticed already that about six different capitals have been involved in speculation in this matter. I expect at least six additional capitals to be involved in speculation before your colleagues overseas get through with it. I would not object to that. I think that if you are not careful, you'll hurt someone's feelings if you don't include them in this party. But nevertheless, we'll have our means to clarify these matters, and I'd like to preserve those means by not discussing them here.
Follow up on that, sir. It wasn't entirely clear to me from your earlier response whether or not you do foreclose the possibility that the explorations that Ambassador Bowles will be conducting in Phnom Penh may or may not interweave in the discussions about Minister Trinh.
Well, the question hasn't even come up until you gentlemen raised it today. The arrangements were made for him to go to Phnom Penh to talk to Prince Sihanouk, and he has no other appointments. And we have no indication anyone else is asking to see him. If I were you, I would concentrate on the Cambodian problem as far as Ambassador Bowles is concerned.
Sir, do you think there's a possibility of getting another Geneva conference or some kind of internationalization of the question of Cambodia's frontiers?
We have been ready for years go to a conference on Cambodia and to take the steps that are necessary to assure the territorial integrity and the neutrality of Cambodia. We've been disappointed that even that limited step has been denied the Geneva machinery thus far. We would hope that if a conference is not possible, that the ICC itself, within the existing arrangements, could take action that would be of assistance in this field. Yes, we're ready for Geneva conference on Cambodia, on Laos, on South Vietnam, North Vietnam, on any part of the Southeast Asian problem, or all of it. And that has been our position for a long time. As you know, there have been...
Do you have any more optimism at the present that such a conference is possible?
No, I think that the question of particular machinery is still open. Our view is that the existing machinery on the ground is able to deal with this problem more effectively if the member governments are prepared to act in that direction, and if Prince Sihanouk is prepared for it to happen in his country, as he seems to be. Now, the three members of the ICC are India, Canada, and Poland. If all three of them took a fully cooperative attitude on this matter, we think they can accomplish a good deal. And we think some of them will take a very cooperative attitude. But Prince Sihanouk indicated that he had not had the impression that there was full cooperation from Poland on this particular point.
Secretary, Prince Sihanouk's public message indicated that the door was open to hot pursuit into his territory, provided it came under certain circumstances. What is the U.S. reaction to that, please?
Well, I think that's should be treated as a hypothetical question at the present time. What we want to do is to eliminate that question by eliminating the conditions that even bring up the question. If the Cambodian government, with the assistance of the ICC, can assure its own neutrality and its own territorial integrity, then the question you refer to does not arise. Now, that we much prefer, and it is not our desire to involve other countries or other areas in this struggle. It's not our desire in any sense of the word. So we're concentrating at the present time on the question of removing the causes of the problem, rather than trying to find an answer to that particular question.
Yes, sir.
This is something that's totally within the purview of
your department, and I think that we can get some clarification. For about 3 years now, your department's been involved in an investigation involving illegal wiretapping and eavesdropping. And I'd like to find out now, if you could tell us, who is responsible for the illegal wiretapping and eavesdropping initially, and also who had custody of the recordings on that illegal wiretapping, and who authorized the destruction of the recordings, which were rather important evidence.
Well, I'm not familiar with the details of your question. Well, it's one of the one of the questions that I feel more suitable to the House of Commons, in which I need notice, because quite frankly, I don't have the answer in my head at the present.
Secretary, I raised the question at that time, and you said it was under study. And I thought about 3 years should be about time enough to make a determination.
Well, since you related this to the Atepka case, I would have to say that since that matter is now on appeal, I'm not going to get into it in any way.
Sorry, unrelated to the Atepka case itself. This matter deals with the handling of personnel matters within your department. Do you condone or approve illegal wiretapping and eavesdropping?
That's I don't condone anything that's illegal. I assure you. I don't know what specific acts you're talking about. If you're talking about something 3 years ago, you're talking about something that is involved in the Atepka case. I'm not going to comment on that.
Secrecy curtain, then. Is that it?
No, it's just I'm not going to comment on a case that is pending on appeal before the Civil Service Commission.
On balance of payments, sir, you were talking about persuading fewer Americans to travel and to get more foreigners. Two questions. Do you really think that you can persuade more foreigners to come here when fewer Americans are going overseas? And second, isn't this an extremely dangerous principle? To try and balance the amount of tourists going in and out of the United States is a principle which, if applied to the rest of American foreign trade, would take us straight back to pre-Cordell Hull isolationism, wouldn't it?
Well, I think that during 1967, an unusual number of Americans made decisions to go abroad. We would like to see in 1968 those decisions cut back to something more near normal in this in these more recent years, and if so, that would achieve the targets that we're talking about. We don't particularly like the necessity of asking American citizens to defer foreign travel. There's a good deal of foreign travel that is essential, and of course that will be taken fully into account in anything that's done in this field. But we are faced with the fact that there are some things we can't afford in the immediate future. One of them is the rate of investment, private investment. One of them is the level of the extension of bank credit. Another is the amount of tourism. We've got to make adjustments at a number of points here if we're to meet our balance of payments objectives.
Will you encourage Senator Fulbright to go ahead with his projected investigation of the Tonkin Gulf incident, and if so, why?
Oh, I have no objection to his inquiring into that. I have no doubt about what the answers will be, but I have no objection to it. Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Secretary, over the years, we've had a variety of statements from yourself, the President, Mr. Goldberg, and others about the conditions under which might stop the bombing of North Vietnam, which has always left me a little confused about your position as well as Hanoi's. Now today you have referred to the President's San Antonio speech, in which he wants productive talks and assumes that the enemy will not take advantage of the ceasefire. This would seem to imply that the United States is requiring a complete cessation of enemy military activity if we stop the bombing. Is this correct? And if it's not correct, would you straighten me out?
Well, I have to go back to a point that I made frequently before, and that is that when you get into detailed interpretations of language that affects war and peace, you need to clarify those and touch with those who can stop the shooting. That is, make those a matter of discussion with representatives of the other side or intermediaries. It would not be, I think, appropriate for me to try to spell out what that assumption means. I have no doubt at all that Hanoi understands a good deal about what that assumption means, and we would be interested if they are interested in discussing what it means. But these are matters that are for discussion and negotiation, matters on which we're in touch with our allies. It is not something which can be, I think, usefully spelled out by one side in the absence of effective contact and discussion with the other side engaged in the conflict.
And in view of the Soviet armed shipment for the Arabs, do you think it's justified, Israel's request for American arms? And if yes, are you willing to give it to them?
Well, I wouldn't want to give an answer to that question today. Prime Minister Eshkol will be here on a visit. I think the general situation in the Middle East will be discussed, including the security situation, the possibilities of moving toward a peaceful settlement there. And I wouldn't want to anticipate a question of that sort just at this stage.
Mr. Secretary.
Yes.
Would we be willing, as we did in Korea, to talk as we fight? In other words, can you conceive of possibly truce talks while the fighting continues?
I would have to simply take you back to the President's San Antonio formula on that question.
Secretary, in this current diplomatic exploration, is it your impression that Moscow and Peking are now prepared to use their influence to bring this war to a negotiated end?
No, we have no impressions of their attitude on at this point. We may get some more firm information on that. It's my impression that Moscow has simply repeated the statement as it was made in Hanoi. I haven't myself noticed anything that Peking has said about it. I wouldn't want to speculate on what either one of those steps might have meant. I think it's a question.
Connection with both the President San Antonio's statement and Foreign Minister Trinh's statement. Are we not committed to test Hanoi's intentions by stopping the bombing and seeing whether or not there would be talks promptly and productively?
Well, let's find out what they mean. Let's find out what this statement means as well as what it says. And then we'll consider that in relation to the President San Antonio's statement, and then see whether there are any conclusions to be drawn from it.
Satisfied with verbal assurances from them that they intended to go into
now, this is not the place for me to answer that question.
Secretary,
yes, sir.
Why has the department failed to ask for prosecution for perjury of the three people who were involved in giving misleading and false testimony under oath on this illegal wiretap?
I believe that's a matter for the...
The things I've spoken of there are well thought out, and if you want to go into any of the terms of illegality and so forth, I'd be delighted to discuss those with you. Why haven't you taken action in 4 years?
I think this is a decision for the Department of Justice based on the records.
Sent to the Department of Justice, and they were informed. The Assistant Attorney General in charge of the Criminal Division in the last week or two has informed a member of Congress it has not been referred to the Department of Justice.
Well, this is not my recollection of it 4 years ago, but nevertheless, I'm...
Do you intend to do something about that or let the statute of limitations run?
I'll have to take it under advisement. I don't know.
Can we get an answer later on that?
I don't know whether you will or not.
Mr. Secretary, by the way, George has had before this government for some time a request for replacement parts for the airplanes and arms lost in the June war. The department says it's under study. Is it still under study, sir, and can you talk about the reasons for that?
It's still under study, yes, sir.
Can you evaluate for us the role of the Soviet Union in the Middle East today?
The question was evaluating the role of the Soviet Union in the Middle East today. I'm not going to say very much about that. You gentlemen asked me a good many questions today about the future and about evaluations that I should not get into. We hope that they will give their full support to the Security Council resolution of late November. We believe that their own interests would lead them to want peace in the Middle East, as our interests would lead us to want peace in the Middle East. We know that there are some differences about the order in which one proceeds from one question to the next. As you know, they have felt that in the past that full withdrawal by Israeli forces to the pre-June 5 position was a prerequisite for action on other questions. I think the Security Council resolution found, I think, a better and more comprehensive answer to that question, and they voted for that resolution. We would hope that that they would work within the framework of the Security Council and in support of Ambassador Jarring to help find the basis for a permanent settlement there. And I think that there is some possibility that their influence can be in the direction of moderation. We also would hope that they would become more interested in finding some means of limiting the arms race in that area. Because none of these countries can feel secure unless there is some sense of limit on the arms that are built up in one or another country. And on that, they can make a very substantial contribution. The real answer to your question is that we'll just have to see as we move in the weeks ahead to support Ambassador Jarring's efforts.
But consideration being given within the administration to a policy of hot pursuit across the Cambodian border. I wonder, in the context of those reports, if you could comment on how well-founded they were and whether there is some kind of a feeling of urgency or time limitation on the discussions with the Cambodians and the ICC.
No, I indicated earlier that our major objective in this situation is to find a way to remove presence of North Vietnamese and Viet Cong elements on Cambodian territory and therefore eliminate the problem rather than to have to pose and face that question. We think this is also Prince Sihanouk's great concern, is to remove the problem rather than trying to find a one or another kind of answer to it in the event the North Vietnamese and Viet Cong forces remain on Cambodian territory. So this will be our principal preoccupation. There was a question back there.
I wonder if you feel that Ho Chi Minh is making peace feelers.
I don't know yet. Yes, sir.
A number of administration officials have said that we have been making significant progress militarily in Vietnam, but none has, as far as I know, suggested that North Vietnam is in dire straits or near collapse. I wondered whether there's any feeling here that Hanoi might be trying to set up the president for a worldwide propaganda attack on his credibility as a seeker after peace in his latest business.
That's always a possibility, but I wouldn't want to make a judgment on that until we have explored more fully just what is behind this statement and what it means. I think it would be premature for me to brush this aside as purely a propaganda play. One has to be careful and watchful about these things. If it does represent a movement, we're interested in movements toward a peaceful settlement. If it is not that, then we'll have to face that and draw the consequences from it. I wouldn't want to characterize this statement today as either a peace feeler, as indicated by the earlier question, or as purely a propaganda move.
Laos. Yeah. How do you read the recent enemy attacks in Laos? Is this an annual dry season search for food, or does it indicate some more aggressiveness on the part of North Vietnamese troops?
Some of it seems to be seasonal in character. Our friends in Laos feel that it is somewhat more than seasonal. We have been watching that very carefully and trying to keep up with it. We've noticed continued movements through Laos and the use of the Ho Chi Minh Trail and operations seem to be associated with that. There have been additional operations against elements loyal to the government that are in scattered positions up in the northeast, and we've seen some increase in traffic, truck traffic, from North Vietnam over in that direction. There again is a point where a desire for peace could be registered very quickly. Those who look upon Ho Chi Minh simply as a nationalist have a difficulty in explaining why he's causing so much trouble in Laos, which is not Vietnamese at all, or indeed causing so much trouble in Thailand. We would be very glad to see the Geneva machinery moved promptly to bring about a 1,000% compliance with the Laos Accords of 1962 by all parties. And that would be a giant step toward peace in Southeast Asia. So we feel the Laotians have a claim upon all of us for full compliance with those agreements. They are recent. They were based upon coalition arrangements inside Laos, the neutralization of Laos, and these agreements were signed by all the parties now engaged in this affair. So we would be much impressed if all the signatories to the Laos Accords would move to let these Laotian people at least take care of their own affairs without being interfered with from the outside. And we would give it our maximum cooperation.
Did pass
balance of payment situation. Do you expect a fresh round of talks to the West German government on more offset purchases and supplies?
Well, we'll be talking to the Federal Republic of Germany and others about the problem of neutralizing the foreign exchange costs of American troops stationed abroad. I must say that we've been very appreciative and much encouraged by the initial responses which we've had from other governments about the President's Balance of Payments Program. Mr. Katzenbach is in Europe. Mr. Eugene Rostow is in Asia. And we've had very good first talks with governments in detail about the program and have been very much encouraged by the attitude that they've taken. I think they understand that they themselves have a considerable interest in this issue, partly because of the importance to them of the American economy, partly because of their common interest in the dollar as a vehicle of international exchange, and partly because of the necessity for close cooperation among those of us whose futures are interlinked to the extent that they are between us and our friends in Western Europe.
That's great. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to a news conference held at the State Department by Secretary of State Dean Rusk. As you've heard, Mr. Rusk said that he is trying to find out whether North Vietnam has changed its policy and has moved towards starting peace talks. Rusk renewed President Johnson's pledge that for its part, the United States will go more than halfway, as he put it, to find peace. He said it's still too early to tell if North Vietnam really wants to talk peace, but that the United States will go more than halfway if it does. He noted that the communists have apparently ordered an intensive offensive in the war in the coming months, and he said there were intolerable violations by the enemy during the New Year's truce. Mr. Rusk's reaction to last week's statement that North Vietnam will hold talks if the U.S. stops the bombing, he said, needs clarification. He noted that Mr. Johnson has said that the U.S. assumes that North Vietnam will not take advantage of a bombing halt to improve its own military position. This is Peter Hackus, NBC News, Washington.
This has been an NBC News Hotline Report. Stay tuned to your NBC stations for other Hotline Reports and for the late developments on NBC News on the Hour.